This is Wayne Heimbach for Labor Express. At various times in labor history, one of the things that you see often is that there are a group of workers who are forced into taking positions that give them real leadership in a movement. Now, often those positions aren't things that they necessarily want, but they're forced by circumstance to fight the fight that is a fight for all working people throughout the country. And we have a situation such as this in Charleston, South Carolina, of people who have been in a union, who are trying to protect their union, and because of circumstances, they're in one of the most important fights going on in the U.S. today. And this is the fight of dock workers in Charleston, South Carolina, to protect their union, and by implication, as we'll see in this interview, to protect the future of the trade union movement as well. Now, to talk about all those rather large issues, we're talking with Leonard Riley, who was elected to the executive board in Charleston of ILA, International Longshoremen's Association, Local 1422. And Leonard, before we go into some of the implications of that fight in Charleston, could you remind our listeners of what happened over a year and a half ago now as you were trying to protect your jobs in Charleston and ran into a confrontation with the police? Could you go over some of that, some of the details, a little bit of the history? Then let's talk about the implications of that.
Yes, thank you, Wayne. As you started out, we are fighting the struggle in Charleston. We have worked for a shipping company for over 23 years, and they notified us in October of 1999 that they were going to use non-organized workers. Of course, our union immediately responded with pickets every time that ship, one of their ships would come in. Well, we had successfully picketed the ship, informing the community of the disadvantage of allowing this kind of erosion of our work standards that we've built up. Those pickets were very successful, and for 3 to 4 months prior to January 20th, we were guarded by 10, 15, 20 police. On January 20th, we met a police force of 600 policemen, helicopters flying overhead, armored cars, assault weapons. We had snipers on the bridges and buildings. This, of course, was unprecedented, and there was really no rationale for this kind of buildup as we saw it that time. In retrospect, we have another view of the circumstances of that night. But the idea, as we see it, they came to make something happen that night, and they did. The police were very aggressive. They marched on us, drove us back into the Union Hall parking lot, causing serious injury to many of our members. And most of all, we had 10 guys arrested because of this action. And these guys were exercising a legally given right to organize an informational picket and to demonstrate. We had all our permits in place, yet these police officers attacked us that night. And as a result, 5 of the 10 guys that were arrested now face felony inciting charges, which can carry up to 5 years incarceration. Mm-hmm. If we allow them to criminalize this kind of activity, which we are federally given the right to do, then we put at risk everything that our union movement has accomplished, because these things were gained through struggle, through pickets, and having a voice in the workplace. So the implication here is that if these guys are allowed to go to jail because of an industrial action, a job site action, then it severely threatens the labor movement.
Right, and these are what we are now calling the Charleston Five, and they're also under house arrest, Leonard. So could you give a little bit of the what's happened since January 20th up until now? They've been under house arrest, and there's been this campaign nationally, which has been somewhat successful as far as we can see it, right?
Yes, we believe it's been very effective and successful. Let me just say a little about the house arrest situation. It's been 20 months now since that event, and there's been no relief in terms of the restriction placed on these guys, even though within 3 months we were back on the job with a contract with this employer. The legal system and the power brokers in South Carolina have seen fit not to reduce any of these restrictions, no flight risks, anything. These guys still remain under house arrest, which calls for them to be in their homes prior to 7 a.m. and not be out of it after 7 p.m. if they're not working. But the campaign to free the Charleston Five has actually gone worldwide. We've just completed a European tour, taking it to the European unions that are very interested in the same kind of activity that's starting to threaten Europe. We've had speakers in Africa. So we believe that, and going all over the United States, we believe that the information being shared to all of the trade unions across the country, and we're starting now to get a great response, that it's going to help us, it's going to wake us up to our duties as trade unionists. And to date, we have not gone to trial. It's been these guys have served under house arrest 20 months. We had a preliminary hearing, which was scheduled for today. Mm-hmm. That was postponed simply because the state prosecutor was not prepared to deal with some of the motions and the evidence that we brought into court. So that power structure there allows them to postpone at their convenience. Hopefully, we will go back into this hearing on next week, Thursday, and we will get a firm date for the first day of trial. We've also been calling for a day of action, which we can talk about in just a few minutes, that will surround the first day of trial. We have commitments right now from 17 different countries, many locals on the West Coast. We are getting more commitments as we speak with different unions, different crafts, and different cities and states in America.
And now that's a lot of support, and it's a lot of support for what ordinarily would have been a rather traditional picket line. Whether you win, you lose, that depends on a lot of different things. But something else happened here, and that's one of the things I want to ask you about. This fight in Charleston, it was not just a fight for what was going to happen with this particular shipping line. It had a lot of other implications as well. And one of the things that your campaign is saying as it goes around the country is that this is a good example of a combination of civil rights and labor rights. And I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Where does that combination come from, and how does that play out in some of the forces in Charleston?
Well, civil rights and workers' rights are civil rights. There's two movements, but there's one goal. The way it comes into play in this situation is that our local is predominantly Afro-American, predominantly black. And we believe our troubles began when we decided to be a force for social change in our community. We believe we were being responsible because we supported people that were friends of workers, and we promised our resources, monetarily wise, and our physical resources to that cause. Mm-hmm. And we subsequently got involved in the politics of our community, and we opened up our halls to political meetings where our community could question the candidates that wanted to run for these offices. And as a result, we played a significant role and electing the first Democratic governor in 12 years. We also participated in the march to pull down the Confederate flag from atop the State House in South Carolina. These two issues, along with many others that we've been very involved in, we believe made us targets of a state government that wants to limit black power, that wants to limit union involvement in politics, in state politics, and the municipality politics, and national politics.
One of the things that you hear about South Carolina is that it's not particularly union-friendly. And that must have some kind of implication for all the things that you're talking about, that the state has its own perspective on what it's trying to do politically and economically in South Carolina. And obviously you guys are saying something quite different. And why is that? I mean, what is it that is in your local? It's not a particularly large local. It's about 800 people.
Yes.
What is in your local that says that you feel that social change is so important that you've not set yourself up, but you allowed yourself to be seen as one of the real movers in South Carolina for social change.
Well, again, it's social responsibility in particular, because we decided to get involved in the process that made decisions for us and all of the members in the community that we live in and work in. And by doing that, we realized some measure of success, and we believe it attributed to the aggressiveness of the state toward us and toward all unions. See, in South Carolina, they pride themselves as being one of the least unionized states in the country, and as a result, they advertise the state as somewhat of a third-world country within the United States borders, where they invite industries to come where they have people that work for less. So we take a difference to that, and we actively try to organize and encourage others to organize so that we can turn that kind of movement around. As a result, the state of South Carolina runs some 20 to 30% below the national average for wages. Mm-hmm. And just recently, statistics have pointed out that at the same time, the state has grown some 20 to 30% in terms of movement of industries to the state. And we believe that's because the state is promoting itself as a place where we can take advantage of workers, and you can come here, you can leave places like Chicago and some of these other big cities where the unions are stronger, you're not suppressed by the right to work laws, and come to South Carolina and do much better in terms of the bottom line. So it impacts places like, it impacts everybody, because if the same jobs that you enjoy now very well may find themselves moving to South Carolina and leaving you behind.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this national implication. A couple of things have happened over the past couple of weeks that I think have shown that unions, union supporters are having a difficult time these days with the right to work passage in Oklahoma, the defeat of the UAW at Nissan. These are hard fights, and they're not going to stop, obviously. And could you put what you're going through with your local within the context of how you see the fight to protect and to defend the Charleston Five within the context of what's happening in Tennessee or in Oklahoma or other places around the country? What's your perspective for the national importance of your fight?
Well, again, the national importance of this fight is that we have some major issues that are very, very systematically seen throughout the whole process. What just happened in Oklahoma is not going to be an isolated case. If the union movement doesn't galvanize around the issues embodied in this Charleston Five struggle and develop a strategy for getting our message out and to deal with the bureaucrats in Washington. And in fact, I go a step further. We must elect laborers that carry our interests to Washington so that we can turn around this this trend. We must elect people from the labor movement, actual workers, to go down state capitol that lobby for the interests of working people, not only organized labor, but workers in general, because the right to work laws work against work against all workers. And I believe this struggle, actually the issues involved in the Charleston Five struggle, transcends Charleston greatly, transcends all of the issues in the labor movement today, because it brings to our consciousness and to our awareness that there is a need. The labor movement has retreated from its responsibility to organize strategies that will move us forward as working people. So I believe that if we if we use this fight in Charleston and we galvanize to win it, that we are on the road to developing a new strategy to deal with the aggressiveness of big business and the private sector.
Right. And I think one of the things that I've seen here doing my union work in Chicago, a couple different things. One, if we go out to organize people, they say, well, what are you doing for the people you already have in your union? And if you can't protect people that you're already part of your family, how are you going to be able to build that movement? And the other thing that people say, less with me, I work in the public sector, but a lot of other industries, is that if we don't make it here, we can go someplace else. And that's what you're saying about South Carolina, is that opportunity, if you will, for business to move. What that means to me, though, given what you're saying, is that it's really important that your fight spark a lot of organizing and thought throughout the South as the unions try to go throughout that part of the country to do organizing. And let me ask you about your campaign, the campaign for the Charleston Five. How is that doing in the South? When you go out and talk to people, how do they respond? They must understand the implications of what's going on.
Yes, it's a sort of mixed review on in the South with this because, again, we are in a right-to-work state, and there's a lot of fear embodied in talking to unions and talking about these kinds of issues. We are in a segregated situation in the South that's very real. We're in a place that has opted to pass a Confederate Memorial Day and refuses to pass a living wage bill, which allows a municipality, a city, to set a wage, a minimum wage, above the federal minimum wage. So you have to understand that the South is a little slower to respond in the sense of organizing for it. But it's starting to move, I believe, in some of the urban centers like Atlanta and Miami. We get a better results versus the more rural areas. We believe that our efforts to organize the South and to organize South Carolina in particular is going to have a good result. We believe that this attack on us because of our efforts is going to backfire on the Manufacturers Alliance in South Carolina. We had a strike of steel workers recently and in Charleston that we believe was elongated beyond where it would have necessarily taken because of the Charleston Five issue. They don't want it to appear that unions are starting to win. And, of course, the longshoremen supported this strike the whole time. We gave monies. We put men on the line so that they can have the visibility that they need to call this to the attention of the community. And eventually the strike was won. And we are going to continue to assist struggling unions and to organize the unorganized workplace because we believe this is where we need to go. If we're not organizing, we are dying.
Right. And I hope you're right about this being this will backfire on them. I think it already has. I'm sure they're quite surprised that there's been this kind of support for the Charleston Five, not only in South Carolina, but in Chicago and every place, a lot of other places around the world. And one of the things that you mentioned earlier that you're going to use to continue that kind of national and international support is this International Day of Action. And what's that? Where are you going to go with that?
Well, I can say the Dockers, we know what the Dockers' response will be. If these guys or when these guys go to trial, the Dockers will shut the docks down in support of this day because we see it as a dark day in the labor movement. We must be able to protect our own, and in order to protect our own, we must show them being the corporate world, the global companies, that we do have muscle and we will flex it to protect our own. Now, we are calling for people involved in the other trade unions and other areas to also demonstrate in this day of solidarity with us. We ask them to do to formulate plans that will be comfortable to them to bring to the attention that this doesn't only affect dock workers, this affects all trade unions. So we are calling on unions and all of the other areas to come up with a plan to participate in a day of solidarity, to send a message to South Carolina and to America and the world that workers are uniting. And when we are united, we are very effective.
And are there any specific plans that you know of that you're trying to encourage people to do, or are you asking each particular committee to come up with its own ideas for this day of action?
Well, right now there are a couple of things that we have been looking at. For example, each of the local committees would formulate what we're going on, the Chicago committee would formulate and supervise what goes on in Chicago. They would coordinate that possibly with the other committees. But an example of such an action was just had in Europe Now, today, they are protesting what they call the European Initiative, which is to privatize the docks and many other institutions over in Europe. So where these people would bring in workers to displace the workers that they presently have. So that's a threat to the European group over there. So what they did, they organized a two-hour strike before lunch. And that's an example of what can happen. They plan to act again in support of the Charleston Five. So we believe that while we leave some of this to the imagination of the local committees, we would be interested in coordinating the time so that it will have a greater impact on the viewing audience on across America.
Earlier this year, one of the officials from the Chicago Federation of Labor compared the fight of the Charleston Five with Haymarket, which is obviously a big issue here in the labor community. And one of the things I think will resolve that for history is what you do in Charleston and what we do in Chicago and other people do around the world to not only win this fight for the Charleston Five, but to take the lessons of it, the importance of pulling together civil rights and labor rights and the importance of seeing national organizing implications for this fight and taking that forward. And you're here in Chicago for a lot of meetings and a lot of discussion about the issues, and I'm very happy to have you here again for Labor Express. And I wish you much luck, and by wishing you much luck, obviously what we're saying is we hope all of us can move forward from where we are to a much better climate for organizing workers in the country. I'm talking with Leonard Riley, who was the elected to the Executive Board of the International Longshoremen's Association, Local 1422, ILA Local 1422 in Charleston. And he's here talking about the fight to defend the Charleston Five. And thank you very much, Leonard.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.